Access number 32386, Mr. Bill Shepherd, Reel 5. Now, we were looking at a typical RAS call, what would happen. Now, how would you take your wireless equipment out? Because you weren't in a lorry, were you?
On mule back.
Now, tell me what equipment you'd take.
It was all mules. You took basic camping equipment, your ground sheet, your blanket, because you slept in the ground, you see, and the kitchen went out, a mobile kitchen was dismantled and went on mule back. Everything went on mules.
Now, what was the equipment you were taking with you?
Charging engine. There's a picture in there of me and the charging engine. Beautiful little charging engines made by a firm in England called Stuart Turner, famous for model making. These were 1 horsepower, post twin, I think, 1 kilowatt. They produced 12 volts, 20 amps. And they charged the batteries for the wireless set. The wireless set we take up with us would be one C set, that's one set, working back to main barracks, which was Morse code only, and mobile sets was packed on the mules, which gave range of about 4 miles, and they worked on continuous wave, interrupted continuous wave, or modulated continuous wave, and they could also work on telephone, work about a range of about 1 mile on telephone. They were aptly named the number one set. It was the first army truly mobile set, and it worked on the 30 meter band, short wave.
Good wirelesses then?
Well, quite good, yes.
Reliable?
Yes.
And carried on mules?
On mules. The whole set weighed about 40 pounds. A mule load was 80 pounds weight, and divided into 2 loads, 40 pounds each side. And generally speaking, the wireless set, which was a transmitter come receiver, would be on one side with the batteries, and the other side carried a spare battery to balance on load, 40 pounds each side. And then you had spare mules to carry your kit, your bedding and your spare kit. You carried it in things called yak dans, which were leather made boxes which hung on the pack saddles of the mules, one yak dan each side of the mule.
Now, what was the terrain like you were going through on these? Because it looks a mixture of desert and very, very hilly valleys and gullies.
About the size of Wales and 3 times higher. Mountainous.
What was it like going on a... on a column?
We enjoyed going on a column, actually, because you're very much confined to barracks. When you were in Rasmach, you see, you couldn't go out by yourself. Dispatch riders used to run once a week from Rasmach down to their Ismail Khan, which was the headquarters, which was a distance of about 140 miles. That was the nearest decision. Was there Ismail Khan, and Warner, another direction, and a place called Banu.
But you didn't do any dispatch riding?
Oh, yes. I did take my turn at dispatch riding.
Well, tell us what it was like. So that would be on motorbike, would it?
Douglas motorbikes. The bikes were too lightweight for the job, actually. They were 350 cubic centimetre Douglas twins. It was called the WD Douglas, anyway. And it wasn't quite up to the job. I was hit once by a missile, a bullet or something, once hit my bike when I was riding it, hit the top of the tank and dented the tank. But the bike didn't stop, and I didn't stop either. I kept on going.
Now, so what? So you're on a column. How far were you going a day? You said
what, about 20 miles.
And what about the overnight stop?
The special camping places. Some of these photographs are in there. The special camping place would be a cleared flat space with enough room for the column to separate and park the mules and all that.
And would you bivouac there or stay there for the night?
Oh yes, stay for the night. There did be some kind of meeting arranged with the local tribes where we stopped, by the way, called a jirga. A jirga with the locals. I believe the bigger in that, a common man's corporal, I didn't know. I believe money was paid out in order to keep the peace. We employed the tribesmen to look after the only road, to keep to guard the road, you know. That was the only police force outside the barracks.
So you'd stay. These are what are the names of the place where you stopped?
Jirga.
And what were they like?
They attended by the politicals. We nearly always had a member of the political establishment with us, a civilian, and he'd meet the tribal chiefs and pay out whatever peace money we had to pay out, and they mentioned any new laws they wanted to look at, look after.
Now, what about the villages you were going to punish? What would you do with them? What would happen
there's
when you
got... There's a photograph in their typical village. Each village would have a square tower, one built tower, and if they'd been naughty, we'd evacuate the village and we'd shoot the tower down, you know, with field guns. You'd shoot the tower down.
So you'd get them everyone out, and then what? How would you shoot with our howitzers or something?
Howitzers, yeah.
Or guns, field guns.
4.5 howitzers. Yeah.
So that you just destroy the tower, not the village.
Not the village, just destroy the tower.
And that was considered punishment enough, was it?
Well, it was the only punishment I ever saw meted out to them. We never destroyed a village. But the tower, yes.
And you wouldn't open fire on the village while there were people still there?
Oh, no. I thought we behaved quite well, although we were in hostile territory, because when we were camping in those camps at night, when we were in column, we were always shot at, there was always sniping.
What was it like being under sniper fire? Because that's your first time in real action.
Oh, yes. Well, we took precautions. We used the bales of straw we had to feed the mules with. We used them as walls, built walls with them, and we slept in the knee of the wall, you see, so that any bullets would be over our heads. I never saw very many casualties. We did at one period receive a number of medals in my unit, my brigade section. We had, I think, 3 or 4 military medals awarded at that time. I can remember Lance Corporal Shorty O'Donnell, he got a medal. And Bill Dunlop, he got a medal.
Did you know why?
Well, they'd been out of the column, you see, and no doubt they were wireless operators. They'd be with one of the outlying patrols, and maybe in a small local action with the tribe, you see, because the tribesmen always carried a rifle. It was a mark of his manhood that he carried a rifle. Often a homemade rifle, sometimes just an old musket, but he carried one, and he had spare bullets which he got some from there, and he'd have a shoot up. Who's the other one? Was Donald, and who's the other one? Another dispatch rider who had a French mother and a British father.
Now, any incidents you remember from being out on the columns? You know, just things that happened to you. I mean, you've told us about the sniper when you were dispatcher.
I marched always with the headquarters part of the column.
Because you were doing the batteries?
Because I did the batteries, and I marched with my, I think, four mules I had. One mule carried a charging set, and the next mule carried all the spare batteries, and the other two mules carried my kit and the kit for the muleteers. The muleteers were always Indians.
What do you think of mules as transport?
Very good. There were two kinds of mules. There were what we call jennets, which was quite a lightweight mule, and which is the one we used to carry our wireless sets and stuff. And they were, once you got them loaded, they sort of gave in, you know. But loading them was always a bit of a fight every morning. It took at least three people to load a mule, holding its nose in a loop rope, but to hold its head steady and hold one leg up so it was standing on three legs. And then we get the stuff loaded on and tied on.
And the muleteers would help you with that, wouldn't they? Or would you do that yourself?
The muleteers held the mule, yes. And then we'd get the mule loaded and it would give a few bucks and then sort of give in, you know.
Did they kick?
Oh, yes. They were quite lightweight mules. The gunners who carried the 4.5 dismountable guns, they had big mules. About the size of Clydale's horses, because the gun was very heavy, and the gun was put on the mule all in one piece, and it took four men to lift that onto the mule. Yes.
Now, anything else happened while you were on these rascals? Because they're quite well known rascals, so people I've heard of them. Any incidents you remember? I know you were back with the main headquarters, so you're not up on the outlying patrols. But
you were out for about a week maybe, doing a march showing where you stand, showing the flag.
So, what else were you doing?
Oh, playing football. Hockey, football.
Well, tell us about that. What sort of, was it formal sport or just informal?
Informal. We were part of hockey was our main game, really.
And did you play?
Well, I was always a goalkeeper.
I mean, was hockey's the big game in India. Had you played before?
I hadn't played before. But it was sort of, we had, of course, in the setup these days was that British troops posted to India went automatically into the Indian Signal Corps, and they were listed as L troop, L for love. And we had a number of country-born British people as well, and they formed the heart of a hockey team, because they were all good hockey players. We were some very good hockey players.
And you were goalie?
I was a goalkeeper.
Any other sport you played, or other recreation?
Well, we did fairly well organised. We used to have race meetings with wooden horses, and dice throwing to show you your pace, you know. Betting was allowed, We're allowed a beer ration. We got beer.
As a proper ration.
Oh yes.
What would you get? Was it an Indian beer or was it?
From Murray Breweries, made in India.
What was it like?
Quite good.
And how much did you get?
About a bottle of beer.
A day.
And if you wanted it, you had to pay for it, of course. You paid for the beer.
Now, was there anything? It doesn't sound like there's that much to do, especially at Razmak.
Well, you were doing lessons. I took all my examinations at Razmak.
Now, examinations for what?
For various trades. You got paid extra money for having an extra qualification, you see.
So, what qualifications did you take?
Classes 3, 3, 2, 1, fitter electrician. For each step, you got an extra 6 months per day. So I finished up as a first class electrician, I'd be on an extra 2 months per day.
Now you'd moved away from driving, hadn't you?
Oh yes, I didn't.
Now why was that?
Because they did Indian drivers. All our drivers were Indians. So I didn't do any driving in India. Just dispatch rider.
Now, so how long were you up there for? I mean, is there anything else about when you were at Razmak? Because you're at Razmak most of the time.
3 years.
3 years at that Razmak. That's a long time.
It's been a long time.
Did it get? Some people went what they call doolally tap.
You have to sunstroke?
Was there a problem? What was the climate like up there?
In Razmak, it was 6,000 feet up, you see. It was very good.
Not too hot?
Not too hot. In the winter time, it was deep snow. And we had a very big water tank in Razmak, so we did swimming. Lots of swimming in the water tank. It was a very big one. It was maybe 50 yards by 100 yards. It was our main water supply, actually.
Did they disinfect it, I presume? Was the water purified after?
Well, I expect so. I never questioned that.
You weren't worried. So anything else about life up at Razmak? Were you still a Lance Corporal? Did you get any promotion?
Oh, no. I lost my stripe in the end.
Now, tell me about that. How'd you lose your stripe?
Telling my commanding officer that he was being too strict with us.
In what way was he being too strict?
Well, it was the normal thing before we got this chap that the day after the column was used, was left the troops to please themselves what they did. But this fella, a new one, he held kit inspections on the day we should have been resting, and he was playing at soldier by throwing your kit on the floor, that kind of thing, you see. And that got too much for me, so I asked for an interview with him and told him if he wasn't careful, one of these days he'd go in the column without any soldiers. And I lost my stripe in consequence.
Did you mind? Did you mind?
Not really.
I mean,
I still did the same job.
Did he calm down, that officer? I mean, did he become a good officer, or did he stay different?
He was very conscious of the fact that he was different. There's a photograph in there of the troops playing a Christmas Day football match in a fancy costume, but this officer standing at the side, dressed in rugger shorts, a rugby shirt, just to be different. He was a bit of a snob.
Now, how did you get? Were you getting on with the lads? Because you're all cramped into you're all. There's not much to do, is there?
We were all very close. We did these race meetings quite frequently, and hockey.
But were there any, I mean, sometimes when you lock lads together like that, there can be trouble. I mean, you can get close together or you can be trouble. You got on better with each other, did you?
I think we all got on very well. Well, one of my good pals there was a chap called Fraser, who was a wireless operator. And strangely enough, his uncle, named Fraser, was at that time Governor General of Australia. True. Fraser was used to gamble on the British football scores. You know.
Did they come through on the way out? I remember
Jock Fraser used to take him at midnight. I remember.
Any other pals that you remember, you know, that you want to tell us about?
Oh, Bill Dunlap previously mentioned, yes. And I nearly had that French lad's name as well. Ah, Marcel something.
Now, did you keep in touch with your family? I mean, your wife.
By email.
So, what would you, I mean, how often would you get letters?
Oh, once a week, yes. Once a week, the letters would come up.
Was that important to you, get letters from her?
It was important to know what was going on, yes. I never failed to write a letter home.
I mean, it's a long time, and you couldn't go back on leave, could you?
No.
Did you miss her? I mean, it's a long time for a young lad to be away from home.
Well, the Labour government came in at one stage, and the new Minister for War decreed that all soldiers who had been abroad for more than 2 years would qualify for leave in UK, and I applied for that. But there's only one condition: you have to pay your own fare, no free warrants. And you paid your own fare at a special rate, and you got a steerage passage home on a troop ship. That is, you got a hammock.
Yes. And did you do that, or could you not afford it?
Well, I had to save up for it. I did. At the end of my tour in Rosbach, I qualified for leave home, and I went home. I went home just at the time that Mussolini attacked Ethiopia. That's some time ago, isn't it? And the result of that was that trooping through the Suez Canal was stopped, and I couldn't get back to India for a whole year. So I got a whole year's leave at home on full pay.
And what did you do on that?
I became a civilian for shooting rabbits and that kind of thing. And eventually, of course, caught up with me, and I got a telegram to report back to Catterick to join a draft and going back to India. And that's when I changed from being at Rosbach, which was an infantry brigade. I changed to a place called Sialkot, which was a cavalry brigade. So I became a cavalry man.
So that would be when? 1937?
There'll be some pictures in there. It would be about that, but...
So you were at the 2nd Cavalry Brigade Signal Troop, Sialkot.
Yes.
And which bit of India is that?
Near Kashmir. It was on the border with Kashmir. What else was that about?
Now, what was the setup there when you got out there?
Well, much better. You busy all the time. When you've got horses, you never finish. You're always at work with horses.
So how was it? What was the composition of your signal troop? What was your place in it? You're still just you're back to private now, aren't you?
Well, I still had two horses to look after.
So tell me about looking at, how do you look at, I mean, you obviously, I think you quite like looking after horses, didn't you?
Oh, yes.
So tell me about looking after the horses.
Well, the first thing in the morning, I was on walking exercise with at least three, sometimes four horses. You'd ride one and lead the others, and you'd do maybe 5 miles walk in the early morning before the sun came up. Then you'd take your horses back to the stables, where you'd water and feed the horses, dry them down because they're all sweating, dry them down, and then you could go and have a shower bath and have your own breakfast. And then you're back in stables again for proper grooming of your horses.
So how do you groom your horse? Because people don't know now.
A curry comb and a grooming brush and a thing for picking stones out of horses' hoofs called the subcadutone, Indian name for it. And you just use the curry comb, which you used to clean the brush with, the grooming brush. And then they become ambidextrous because you did the horse's right side with your right arm and his left side with your left arm. The brush oval brush about that size with a strap across the back, when you put your hand through the strap, and that was the action of all that, you see. And they groomed the horses, they'd be inspected, and that was that.
What about feeding the horses?
Oh, that was regular. The feeds were always measured out by the sergeant in charge. In a feed bin, a kind of a deep basin. And there's always hay in a hay rack above the horse's head. And horses were generally in stalls. And the horse could reach the hay in the corner, but he had to reach for it. And that he got his regular corn.
Did you get fond of your horse?
Always, yes. Some.
You had two, didn't you, Doug?
I always had two.
And what were they used for? What did you use them for? I mean, I know you're cavalry, so, but what were your two horses for?
We just exercised them. We went out with the cavalry column when it went out. There's a photograph in there of the cavalry camp. We just tethered your horses to a stake.
But what I mean is, why did you have two horses? I mean, were they for carrying your, instead of mules, carrying
one,
your...
One carried your kit and the stuff you used on your job, and one was to ride, your rode one.
So it would carry your charging engine and your other equipment, the other one?
He carried a charging engine on his back, on a saddle on his back. A very awkward thing to load because it's top heavy, you see. I think the charging set weighed about 80 pounds.
So tell me about the camp at Sialkot, or the barracks at Sialkot. What was it like?
On the plains.
It was on the plains, yeah.
Absolutely.
And what was? Could you describe it?
It was a modern type Indian barracks with shaded walkways everywhere. Everywhere you walk between the various barrack rooms you had a covered walkway, walk in shade. There was great emphasis on shade. And we had one of our huts had a swimming pool in the hut. You could go and sit in there if you felt too hot. It was very hot there. 110 in the shade, 115, like that.
How did you cope with that hot climate?
Just by drinking lots of water. There was always big jars of water in the stables with the mug, and you could drink water, drink it or pour it over your head if you liked. But you sweated profusely.
Did many people get sunstroke or sunburn or the rest of it?
Well, if you could afford it, you could go up to the hills for about 2 weeks, but you had to pay for that. You see, there was no freebies in in the Indian Army. He paid for everything.
Did you go up to the hill station?
I never could afford it. I stayed in Sialkot and groomed two horses and got prickly heat and all that kind of thing. Prickly heat.